Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
We, you know, had a meeting and said, like, this is what the direction we need to go in. I just think we all became better at what we do.
Okay, Patrick, so we're going to do a patron episode today. We haven't done these in a while.
No.
Because, I don't know, just everything's been kind of crazy the last, you know, 2-3 months. But yep. We're getting back into it now. We got some folks who have been longtime supporters of the pod, and we owe them
<That's right.
laughs> this appreciation by letting them come on the show and pick the topic and all of that. And so I'm going to welcome here back to Rockin' the Suburbs with Jim Linehan
and Patrick Foster.
I'm going to welcome Eric Lorenz. Hey, Eric.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing great, man. Good to talk to you.
Doing pretty good. Now, here's my thing. I'm going to tell you this little behind-the-scenes story real quickly here, Eric and listeners. I just got home from the day job, and, you know, we had this scheduled, and I had about 15 minutes of time to get ready. And I was like, oh, man, I better eat something real quick because I'm really hungry. And what did I have in the refrigerator but leftover soup? And it was really good. It was from an Asian restaurant. It was really good stuff. But don't try to eat soup quickly. That's not a food you pick out when you have to, like, not much time to get ready. So it was fail on my part.
Yeah, you want to go more toward a Hot Pocket type of situation.
Even that might be too hot to eat quickly. You want to get like a cold cut sandwich or something like that. You can just eat really fast, right? Anyway, mistakes were made. Okay, so Eric, you're out there in Illinois, and before we get started with the topic, we're going to mention that we are going to be out in Illinois on August 4, 5, and 6 for Suburbs Fest Midwest, and we hope everybody can come out there and join us. There's going to be live music. There's going to be just, you know, fun gatherings and probably a bit of drinking, and you can find all the information at suburbspod.com. Just go there, look at the Suburbs Fest page, and you'll see where we're going to be, and it's going to be great. And Eric's going to be there, is what I understand, or he's planning to be there.
Yes, I'm planning to make it. Looking forward to it.
That's going to be great, and I know there's going to be a 24-hour live broadcast on Suburbs Radio simulcast, so Eric will stop by and be a guest on that show. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I'd be happy to do that.
Oh,
I'd
yeah. Yeah, that's going to be set. It's going to be in a used car lot, I think, with a lot of bunting.
There you go.
A lot of echo.
Yeah,
Sunday, Sunday.
Scott Parks is going to work on that, too.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be really fun to see Eric.
Yeah, that'll be great.
All right, Eric, so what would you like to talk about today?
Well, as you guys probably already know, I'm a big fan of musical anniversary years. I've already done episodes on 1980 and 1981. So for today's episode, I'm going to jump ahead a couple decades and talk about two albums and two songs from 2002. Yeah, and then we can give honorable mentions to a few more albums from that year because I think it was a very good year. The first album I'd like to talk about is Source Tags and Codes by And You Will Know Us by the Trail of Dead. This album and the other album I'm going to talk about are easily two of my favorite albums of 2002. Source Tags and Codes was released in February 2002 on Interscope. And I already discussed the band and this album a little bit back at episode 1107 when I was talking about the Trail of Dead's 2012 album Lost Songs.
I remember that.
Yeah, Patrick also shared a concert experience from the Source Tags and Codes tour.
So
back in episode 1107, I said that Source Tags and Codes has an epic quality to it, balanced by a relatability and humanity that pulls you into the songs, and I stand by that assessment. The music is mainly guitar driven. This was a lot heavier, I think, than the 2012 album I talked about. But in addition, the band added some instrumental flourishes, including strings and accordion. And in addition, all the songs are linked by interludes of found sounds. And I remember playing this as I was driving around, and my son, who was 10 years old at the time, was a little creeped out by the found sound interludes. There's even a 75-second instrumental interlude After the Laughter, that serves as a piano and static-driven in transition between the ninth song, Relative Ways, and the closing song and title track, Sowers, Tags, and Toads. This is an album that I really like to listen to from start to finish, but some standout tracks include the opener, It Was There That I Saw You, Another Morning Stoner, How Near, How Far, Monsoon, Relative Ways, and Another Morning Stoner. This album was a critical favorite during for 2002. So, what do you guys know about this?
I know that I can't believe it's been 20 years since this record
right.
came out. It makes me feel kind of old, actually.
I remember this band being like somewhat big at this period,
yeah.
right? Like, this was sort of like their biggest.
This
their
one,
high water mark, I guess, or sort of, you know?
Yeah. I still think it is their high water mark, and I talked about this back when we talked about the 2012 album.
Yep.
I was kind of down on the two albums that came after that because I thought they were a little bit too bombastic, whereas this album, I think, is a little bit more balanced between the bombast and the melodies and the humanity, and then their 2012 album was a little bit more subdued, even... I don't know, even like power pop to some extent, but this one to me is a standout, and there it is their high watermark from my perspective.
All right, very cool. Let me ask you this question about, and you will know us by the Trail of Dead. Do you think their career would have been different with a different name? Do you think that held them back at all?
I think they were always something of a niche band, and so. I don't think their name either scared off people that would have otherwise listened to them or attracted people that wouldn't have listened to them.
That's a good answer. And also, how many bands in musical history start their name with an ellipses, right?
Well, there's that.
There's not that many.
I do like
yeah.
it. I do like it. And it
does often put them first in an alphabetical
that's right.
listing of
yeah.
Groups.
Yeah, very first. That's right. Yeah. It's before the numbers, the ellipses.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I think it's provocative, so it draws you in to some
totally.
Extent there.
Totally.
But I will tell you, as experience, as someone who foolishly named their band the Bloody Stumps, I know from experience that people get an impression
That's
based
true.
On the name of what the band is, and it doesn't, you know, that can sometimes hurt you.
Absolutely.
Yes. I do think that And You Will Know Us by Our Trail of Dead does have a grandeur that is consistent with the type of music that they play. So,
true.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Okay. Now, where do we go from here?
All right. Well, the second album I'd like to talk about is Turn on the Bright Lights by Interpol.
Mm.
And this album is in a toss-up with Sowers, Tags, and Toads for my favorite album of 2002. I don't know that Interpol needs much of an introduction here, but they are a Manhattan-based band that was part of the New York indie music scene that emerged from the post-punk revival of the early 2000s. Turn on the Bright Lights is Interpol's debut album. It was released in August 2002 on Matador Records, which I guess would be a good candidate for what came first, Patrick.
There you go.
Following some singles on Matador and another label, The album was very well received. It was in the top 10 on NME's list of top albums for 2002 and number one on Pitchfork's list of the top 50 albums of that year. This is an album that I can distinctly remember the first time I heard it. I picked up the CD right before I had to make a business trip to the University of Virginia. I listened to it in my rental car while driving at night from the Richmond Airport to Charlottesville.
Wow. So,
I expect a lot of folks in the community are familiar with this album, but in case you're not, has Jim got it there?
Jim's got a hold of the vinyl copy.
Oh, he's got the
vinyl.
Beautiful.
That's
good
beautiful.
Good man. Yeah. Good man.
Good call.
Yeah, it's another guitar-driven album in a post-punk revival vein. Interpol's early sound has been compared to Joy Division and the Chameleons, and I think that's an apt comparison. This is another album I like to listen to from start to finish, and I don't think you can really go wrong with any of the songs. Nodding your heads, clearly you're familiar with it, as I'm sure is most of our community.
Probably. I'll just say, so here I have the vinyl that I have here. I have a CD of another of their albums, Antics, which I think came out, that was the next one, I believe.
Yes, it was very, to me it was very similar sounding, but not as good as this one.
Yeah.
Well, it is. Pretty much all their songs are kind of similar sounding. I think I've mentioned this before, but I don't care because I love that sound so much that just give me more of it. I'll take all of that you got, as people
exactly
say. So I love this record. I remember when this came out. I mean, I think it had a big appeal to younger listeners at the time as well, but I think to guys like our age, it immediately struck us because it sounded so much like stuff we grew up with.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Right? And in a good way. Like, and these were good songs, and they just really, like, well-crafted, and they performed them very well, they arranged them well, it sounded great, and, you know, I could just listen to this album over and over again.
It always reminds me of the thing where you say, like, oh, Joy Division is like one of the most influential bands. Well, try to make your band sound like Joy Division. You can't do it. You know, it's very hard. And Interpol get pretty damn close. And I remember
they came close.
They did.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing this tour, and they literally did turn on the bright lights. They shined spotlights on the audience and reversed the whole thing. It was kind of cool. And they were just kind of silhouettes. And yeah, it just has that stately quality that's really hard to get.
I didn't get to see them until their the Interpol, the eponymous album, which was in, what, like 2010 maybe?
Yep.
But okay. I think they're releasing another album this summer, and I'm due to see them in St. Louis in September.
Sweet.
I'll tell you one other funny thing about this band is there was a period about 10 years ago or so, because I see, how old are my kids now? I'm very old, so they're somewhat old. There was a period about 10 years ago when they were little, and we really got into that Wii game Rock Band.
Right.
And we played all these songs, you know, we would play the game, play all these songs, you know, quote unquote, play these songs together on Rock Band, and there was an Interpol song.
Really?
On one of the game discs.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I want to say it was PDA. I'm pretty sure it was PDA. That was fun. And it was a great one to play on that game because, you know, the thing about Interpol is they're very rhythmic.
Yep.
you know, in what they do. So it, you can really kind of get into a groove and hit all the notes right. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it was great.
So did that make Interpol fans of your kids, Jim?
Well, it's funny. I bet if I played that song again, they would immediately remember.
Yeah, they probably would.
Know?
Yeah.
But I don't know that they've. My daughter might know more about them now because since she went to college, she got way more into indie rock.
My daughter, I don't know if she was into this album, although I did play it in the car when I was driving them around. But she did really like Antics, the follow up. So
oh, cool.
She would have been maybe 13 or so at the time. So
nice.
I was proud of her.
Yeah, it's very good. It's always good when they understand what you're trying to go for. No doubt about it.
I can't always get what they're going for, but well, I'm going to change direction now and talk about a couple songs from 2002, which I don't usually do. But the reason I'm taking this approach is that around 2001, I was turned on to the CMJ New Music Monthly magazine, which I'm sure you guys both are familiar with. And that was an important source of new music for me from 2001 until 2008 when the magazine folded. Each magazine came with a CD of new songs by various artists, and I would listen to the CDs religiously to identify new songs and the bands that I liked. And this was also about the time that I started listening to an MP3 player during my daily work commute. And a lot of songs that I ripped from the CMJ CDs were in heavy rotation on my playlist. And this was also around the time of Napster. So considering the combination of a monthly compilation CD and heavy use of an MP3 player, I think this was a time when I started to become a little bit more song-centric as opposed to album-centric. That's probably a good topic for another episode. But to get to the specific songs, the first song from 2002 that I want to highlight is Everywhere You Turn by Long Wave. Another band from the early 2000s New York scene, and this song appeared on the November 2000 CMJ New Music CD. Long Wave has been described as indie rock, shoegaze, and dream pop, but I consider them to be, at least for this song, in the post-punk revival genre. Everywhere You Turn starts off with a kicking you in the gut with its propulsive drum beat and its churning bass line. And it's overlain by a variety of processed guitar sounds and vocals that recall Julian Casablancas of the Strokes. So I found that to be very compelling.
I think that part of what you're describing, too, is that we got to an era where more and more information started coming at us in different ways. And it was best for us to just, like, grab a little piece that we really related to. You know, it was kind of like being a rock in a stream, and, like, certain stuff would stick to you and certain stuff right. wouldn't. But, I mean, I think everything accelerated in that era.
Right.
And then it wasn't too long after that that Napster started happening and MP3 started happening and all that, you know, and kind of the floodgates broke open. But kudos to you for picking out a song. I mean, do you think there was a shift in your mentality when you were like, I have less time, so I have to focus on smaller bits of stuff?
I think so. It's like what you were saying. There was just so much coming at me. And so the monthly CDs were intended to be something of a digest, and I would digest it further by picking, you know, 10 or 12 that I would upload to my playlist and then
right.
play that. So,
yeah, I would love to have my like weekly compilations from that year in some form. Because I'm sure I would love to see what those songs were. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Well, the second CMJ song from 2002 is Worst Comes to Worst by Bats and Mice. Hmm. And Bats and Mice were formed in Richmond, Virginia, and it looks like they released just one album, Believe It Mammals, in April 2002. So, Patrick, are you familiar with them?
No, I've never heard of Bats and Mice.
Really?
No, I never have. No, not at all. How about you, Jim?
No.
I've never heard of them.
Okay.
Well, cool name.
That's a great name. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're much more subtle and downbeat than any of the bands we've talked about so far. And I'd say consider them along the lines of Death Cab for Cutie. Hmm. In fact, if you look to or if you listen to Black Sun, the lead single from Death Cab for Cutie's 2015 album Kintsugi, it sounds like they co-opted part of the melody from Worst Comes to Worst for their bass line.
Go Bats and Mice.
Yes,
that was nice.
A good palate cleanser.
I like that.
A good palate cleanser after listening to Trail of Dead and Interpol and Long Wave.
Totally true. Right. Yeah, but I like the stateliness of that. I mean, to me, it reminds me of Slint a little bit, right? Where they have the drums kind of going and the in and outs. Yeah, beautiful. Love that. Love that.
Great.
They probably played at Strange Matter. I bet.
Probably did, yeah.
Well, to wrap up this episode, I'd like to go through some of the other albums really quickly that came out in 2002, and there were a lot of good ones. For example, a few of the big ones would be Yankee Hotel Foxtrot by Wilco, A Rush of Blood to the Head by Coldplay, The Rising by Bruce Springsteen, Sea Change by Beck, and Brainwashed, which was George Harrison's final album released posthumously.
Huh. Wow.
Okay.
Debuts in 2002, besides Interpol, included The Libertines, Up the Bracket.
I love that album.
So do I.
Highly Evolved by The Vines. In Search of by NERD, which was produced by the Neptunes, from whence Pharrell came. The Walkmans, Everyone Who Pretended to Like Me Is Gone.
Oh, I like that too. Yeah.
One Time Bells by The French Kicks. OK Go, self-titled debut. Hmm. Original Pirate Material by The Streets, Make Up the Breakdown by Hot Heat, and The Raveonettes' debut EP, Whip It On.
That's a pretty good year. Yeah, not bad at all.
I got a few more. Other albums by established artists included Heathen by David Bowie, Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots by The Flaming Lips, Songs for the
Deaf
by Queens of the Stone Age, Elvis Costello, When I Was Cruel, 18 by Moby, By the Way by Red Hot Chili Peppers, the About a Boy soundtrack by Badly Drawn Boy, and last but not least, Electric Sweat by the Mooney Suzuki, which Patrick gave me, I think, as a Patreon CD.
I did. I love the Mooney Suzuki. I like that band a lot. Yeah, they're really cool.
Maybe it was Jim who got me that one. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it was.
I don't remember, but I like them a lot, too.
Might have been Jim. Yeah. We don't know.
Super power pop stuff.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Very cool. Man, what a great survey. Yeah. So, Eric, man, you got to pick one from this year. What are you going to do? I have to come in as the police and take away all your 2,000 releases except for one. What are you keeping?
I'm going to keep the Interpol, Jim.
All right, cool.
I'm Patrick. Nice. I'm sorry.
No worries.
Now, see, Eric, if you could keep an, if you kept another one, I would just, you know, let you borrow mine.
Well, the other one would be the other album we talked about, which
was
Source Tags and Codes.
That's not part of the rules.
All right. What a great selection. Wonderful.
Amazing.
Yeah, that was a good year.
I mean, what would you say, you know, is kind of like your peak era for discovering new music?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I was thinking about that because, you know, your college years are very, you're very much into that. My experience was my daughter was born in 1990. And then for like the next 10 years or so, my son was born in 92. So I was very tied up with child rearing. And then by the early 2000s, they had, you know, gotten some independence. And I really think that's when I started on the second phase of my discovering new music. So
interesting.
You know, the college, when I was independent, college, high school, college years, but the 2000s were when I really started it again, I think, just because I did not have as much, you know, as much going on in my kids' lives.
So there's like that 10-year blackout when you commit to raising children. Yeah,
exactly.
We've all been there. Yeah. That's
but,
cool.
You know what happened during those 10 years is I would make mixtapes and we would have to drive to my parents and I would play mixtapes for my kids of things like Big Dipper.
Nice.
And Julian Cope and the Teardrop Explodes. And they still remember those songs when I pick them out and spin them for them.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, yeah.
I had this experience just a couple of years ago or so. Because I used to have like mix CDs or playlists on my iPod that I would play a lot in the car when the kids were in the car. Because it was like all stuff that I picked that I liked, but I knew was like sort of, you know, kid friendly and that they might enjoy as well. But it was all like alternative and indie stuff, right? And a couple of years ago or so, I think it was my son says to me, you know, he's like, Dad, you know all those songs that you used to play in the car? Like, I thought those were all, like, hit songs, and it turns out nobody else knows these songs.
Exactly.
Because he would mention to his friends, he would just talk to his friends as if they, like, knew a certain song, because he'd heard it 200 times. And they'd be like, what are you talking about?
Anyway, that's a topic for another episode.
Yeah.
That's right. All right, thanks very much, Eric.
Thanks, Eric.
This was great fun.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
If anyone would like to comment about the music of 2002, you can do that by calling and leaving a message,
612-440-1984.
There you go. Or you can email rock@suburbspod.com or leave a comment on our Facebook or Twitter or Instagram @suburbspod. Matt Windler, intern Matt, will get to all of that, right? He's very good about it. He's really, really good about it. So, okay. All right. Thanks, Eric. And I guess that's it. This is Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
I'm Eric Lorenz.
We'll talk to you all later. Nowadays, if you go to Best Buy, you just buy, you can do like drones, stuff like that. That's what they have there now.
Or, or like a smart washer that texts you when the clothes need to be changed.
Yeah. That's right. Does it text you when your clothes need to be washed? That's what I need.
That's right. Jim.
Wash that shirt, God damn it.